Welcome back to Radio Reader and the Herald and Decatur Review, Part 2 for February 5th. We're going to start with obituaries. Sharon J. Gallagher, 71, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, February 2nd, in her home with her family by her side. The family will be hosting a memorial service to celebrate Sharon's life 10 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 1 Back Rack Court, Decatur, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions in Sharon's honor may be directed to DMH Hospice. James C. Horath, Sr., 75, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, January 31st, 2016, in his home. Services to celebrate James' life will be 2 p.m. Monday, February 8th, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services at the funeral home, and burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the wishes of the family in care of James Horath, Jr. Judy M. Koyak, K-O-Y-A-K, 65, of Decatur, passed away on February 4th at St. Mary's Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at First Congregational United Church of Christ. Visitation will be 2 hours before service time at the church. Burial will be at Macon County Memorial Cemetery. Memorials may be made to First Congregational United Church of Christ, 3465 North MacArthur Boulevard, in Decatur. Margot A. Luttrell, 71, of La Place, Illinois, passed away Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016, at her residence. Private family memorial service will be held at Brettlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Cerro Gordo, Illinois. Burial will be in Camp Butler Cemetery, Riverton, Illinois. M. Jean Redman, 77, of Maroa, Illinois, passed away 5:18 p.m. February 3rd, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur. No services are planned at this time, as per Jean's request. Memorials may be made to the Maroa Christian Church or the donor's choice. Dwight C. Strohl, Strohl, passed away 1:10 a.m. Thursday, February 4th, 2016, at Imboden Living Center at the age of 94. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, 2016, at McMullen Young Funeral Home, Bethany. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home, Bethany. Burial will be in Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany, with military rites by the Bethany American Legion, Post 507. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice or through Grace United Methodist Church, 901 North Main Street, Decatur, Illinois, 62521. Alfred Julian Doc Williams, 74, of Decatur, passed away December 17, 2015. Cremation rites have been accorded to Graceland Fairland Funeral Home. Services will be at a later date. Memorials to the American Heart Association or Homeward Bound Pet Shelter. Marion Dixon, 86, of Henderson, Nevada, formerly of Decatur, died Saturday, January 30th, 2016, in Sunrise Hospital of Las Vegas. A memorial service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Saturday, February 6, 2016, in Westminster Presbyterian Church, 1360 West Main Street, Decatur, Illinois. Memorials may be directed to a charity of the donor's choice. Decatur plant buys Mueller, Boyce Mueller. Surging results from the division that includes factory and foundry operations in Decatur helped Mueller Water Products, Inc. offset sagging sales elsewhere and saw net income swing from previous loss to a $6.2 million profit in the fiscal year quarter ended December 31st. The Atlanta-based company said Thursday its overall net sales fell to $242.7 million from $261.8 million at this time a year ago, but the gold was in that $6.2 million net income number, which contrasted sharply with a net loss of $20 million in the prior year's first quarter. Earnings per share in the latest first quarter came in at 4 cents, which beat Wall Street expectations by a penny. The $242.7 million net sales number had missed Street predictions by $13.25 million. Management said those statistics were waterlogged by some flagging sales, the divestiture of a castings business, and unfavorable currency exchange rates. First quarter sales in the Mueller Company division, which includes the Decatur operations, were also off slightly, $144.7 million compared to $145.1 million a year ago. But adjusted operating income surged. It shot up 17.1% to hit $24 million against $20.5 million in the last 2015 fiscal first quarter. Mueller's company's signature valves, hydrants, and brass products enjoyed a more than 9% sales lift in the latest quarter, and the company said Mueller Company's solid numbers helped lift the overall financial picture for the entire corporation. We saw strong sales growth of Mueller Company's core products during the first quarter and continued improvement in operating performance, said Gregory Hyland, Mueller Water Products Chairman, President, and CEO. Casting an eye forward, Hyland said he was feeling buoyant about 2016 prospects, fueled by rising demand in both municipal and residential construction markets. Hyland has also said previously that the pressing need to overhaul the nation's aging and leaking water infrastructure system will also boost sales of the new pipes and valves required for the work. We believe we are on track to meet our expectations for the full year, he said. Some local business stories. The Hometown Buffet in Forsyth closed Thursday, one of 74 underperforming restaurants shuttered by its parent company, Food Management Partners. Ovation Brands has acquired by Food Management Partners in August 2015. Since that time, we have continued to execute former management's operating plan to stabilize and enhance the performance of the company. However, based on ongoing assessments of individual restaurants, it is necessary to shutter locations for the continued viability of the brands and our employees, Peter Donvrand, Vice President of Business Development, said in a statement. The restaurant opened in 1994, along with Applebee's and Cheddar's. Michael Ritchie, who formerly managed Burger King on Prospect Road, has been winging it the past month, and her customers don't mind one bit. That's because it's the name of the new place she's managing for her mother, Elizabeth Batchelor, at 1510 East Pershing Road, and one that already has a following. My mom and I were ready to do our own thing, and we've never done it before, Ritchie said. The emphasis is on 10 flavors of jumbo chicken wings and on takeout and delivery to Decatur, Forsyth, Oriana, and Mount Zion. But the business has burgers too, plus a number of sides. Just Wingin' It opens at 10:30 a.m. daily, closing at 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and at midnight Friday and Saturday. For more, find the eatery on Facebook or call 217-330-7372. A Decatur hearing aid provider is now working with a national company at its store at 2888, that's 2888 North Monroe Street. It was updated. Connect Hearing will hold an open house from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 10th, to show off the changes. The business was formerly known as Hometown Hearing and Audiology. The newly updated facility offers free hearing evaluations and a full suite of hearing aid services, including sales, repairs, and cleanings. By joining with the Connect Hearing brand, the business is expanding its offerings to include no-money-down hearing and aid trials and a free national and international travel program. We're proud to carry on the Hometown Hearing and Audiology legacy of personalized hearing health care while bringing new offerings like the risk-free two-week hearing aid trial to Decatur, said Derek Heflin, a hearing instrument specialist at the center. Connect Hearing has 300 locations across the country, including one in Champaign. Hours are 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information, go to www.connecthearing.com or call 217-877-8430. Elizabeth Blankenship has launched a business based in Bloomington intended to help farmers find land. Ag Land Market is a way of compiling information about land that is available for farmers, Blankenship said. The information can otherwise be hard to come by. This is brand new for Central Illinois, Blankenship said. It's a place farmers can find local land. The service can be particularly useful for beginning farmers looking for a place to start. It has the ability to grow in scope, but Blankenship said the focus is starting on Central Illinois, an area full of prime farm ground. The business can also be a way for landowners interested in finding a treatment for their land, Blankenship said. Most agreements are already in place for the upcoming growing season, but she said the focus will soon turn toward 2017. For more information, go to www.aglandmarket.com or call 779-800-5263. And Curlin's Hallmark is closing on Valentine's Day after more than a dozen years in business at 2875 North Water Street. But you can get sweets for your favorite sweetie until then for 50% off. Dr. G's Brainworks has closed its store at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. The Forsyth store had been open since last summer. This is a international story. World pledges $10 billion for Syrians, but peace prospects are bleak. From London, world leaders pledged more than $10 billion Thursday to help fund schools, shelter, and jobs for refugees from Syria's civil war, money that British Prime Minister David Cameron said will save lives, will give hope, will give people the chance of a future. But participants at the aid conference in London acknowledged that prospects for ending the conflict have rarely been worse. Peace talks are suspended, fighting is intensifying, Russia and the West are at odds, and millions of Syrians are suffering from bombardment, homelessness, and hunger. The situation in Syria is as close to hell as we are likely to find on this earth, said United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry was no more upbeat. After almost 5 years of fighting, it's pretty incredible that we come here in London in 2016. The situation on the ground is actually worse, he said. The one-day meeting, held under tight security at a conference center near Parliament, aspired to bring new urgency to the effort to help the 4.6 million Syrians who have sought refuge in neighboring countries, including Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. Another 6 million people or more are displaced within Syria, and 250,000 have been killed. Previous calls for international donations have come up short, and the five-year war has driven a chaotic exodus of hundreds of thousands of desperate refugees to Europe. Thursday's pledges are intended to slow that migration by creating school places and secure jobs for Syrian refugees in the Middle East and economic support for the overburdened host nations. Cameron said participants had pledged almost $6 billion in 2016 and another $5 billion in 2020. The British leader called the conference, hosted by Britain, Germany, Norway, Kuwait, and the UN, a real breakthrough, not just in terms of money, but in terms of how we handle these refugee crises. The tally falls short of the $9 billion the UN and regional countries said was needed for 2016 alone. But it was a significant improvement on half-hearted previous fundraising efforts. Last year's conference in Kuwait raised just half its $7 billion target, forcing cuts to programs such as refugee food aid. Aid groups welcomed the money, but slammed the international community for allowing the war to go on. Peter Maurer, president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, said the world had shown a lack of political action and ambition to resolve the crisis. Humanitarian aid is always just a quick fix, and never enough, he said. Cameron told reporters that the international community would stand with Syrians for as long as it takes to secure peace, acknowledging that the goals of a ceasefire followed by a transitional government remain distant. Thursday's meeting opened hours after the latest UN-led bid to start peace talks in Geneva was suspended for 3 weeks, a sign of major difficulties. Kerry blamed Syria's government and Russia for the peace talks stalling. He said he and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov have spoken by phone Thursday and agreed to continue discussing how to implement the ceasefire. Russia's foreign ministry said the two had also agreed to ensure the pause in the talks was as short as possible. Neither statement mentioned any concrete measures. Russia gave the conference a cool reception, declining to send President Vladimir Putin or a senior minister to the event. Attended by 30 heads of government or heads of state, Russia was represented by its ambassador to London, Alexander Yakovenko. The Syrian government, backed by Russian airstrikes, has increased the pace of attacks on opposition forces in recent days as the talks faltered. The UN's ban told the conference it was deeply disturbing that the initial steps of talks have been undermined by the continuous lack of sufficient humanitarian access and by a sudden increase of aerial bombing and military activities within Syria. He said that the coming days should be used to get back to the table, not to secure more gains on the battlefield. The stalled peace process increases pressure on donor countries to commit long-term aid to the war's victims. Aid workers warn of a lost generation of Syrians if some 700,000 refugee children are not attending school, don't get an education. Education campaigner Malala Yousafzai and 17-year-old Syrian refugee Mazen Al-Mahin met with Cameron and other leaders to press for $1.4 billion for education for children in Syria and its neighbors. Without education, who will bring peace? Al-Mahin said. Donor countries also want to see the refugees employed on infrastructure projects, which would also benefit the host nations, or in special business zones where Syrians and local people can work side by side. In return for opening up their economies to the newcomers, host countries are promised loans from international financial institutions and more access to European markets. Cameron said the move would create 1 million jobs in the region for refugees and residents alike. Syria's neighbors had warned the conference that the burden of so many newcomers was becoming intolerable. Jordan's King Abdullah said his country housed almost 1.3 million Syrian refugees, a fifth of Jordan's population. The Jordanian figure includes all Syrians in the country. The UN says it has registered 630,000 Syrian refugees in Jordan, "We have reached our limit," the king said. "Our country will continue what we can to do to help those in need, but it cannot be at the expense of our own people's welfare." From Portland, Oregon, "The four remaining occupiers at an Oregon wildlife refuge are facing charges, according to court documents released Thursday, that say more than a dozen armed activists threatened violence against federal authorities and used social media to urge others join them. A newly unsealed indictment named 16 defendants, including the holdouts, standoff leader Ammon Bundy, and other occupiers arrested last week. Also named is Kenneth Mettenbach, who was arrested after being caught driving a government vehicle to a supermarket. A federal grand jury charged all with felony conspiracy, accusing them of using intimidation to prevent federal officers from doing their work at Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. The holdouts have said they are not leaving without a guarantee they won't be arrested. If they stay true to their word, the indictment buries any chance they will surrender on their own. The U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI declined comment Thursday, but the lack of movement in recent days indicates negotiators were not offering amnesty. The remaining occupiers are David Fry, 27, of Blanchester, Ohio, Jeff Banta, 46, of Elko, Nevada, and Sean Anderson, 48, and Sandy Anderson, 47, a married couple from Riggins, Idaho. Fry's father, William Fry, was disappointed that his son has been charged, saying in an email, "We're hoping for a more positive outcome." He said his son is no different than those who believe our country is heading in the wrong direction. He believes it so strongly he is willing to stand up with the hope that these actions might wake the nation up and lead others to get involved and change our country's course. William Fry said he still is hoping and praying to welcome our son home safely. Responding to the grand jury indictment, Ammon Bundy on Thursday struck a defiant tone in an audio recording and a written statement from the county jail in Portland where he's being held. "Taking over the refuge was not only right, it was the duty of the people to do," Bundy said in the audio recording, which was released by his family. Bundy called his jailed followers political prisoners who were just trying to educate ranchers and others about their constitutional rights on federal lands and abuses by federal authorities. Bundy made reference to the death last week of one of the lead occupiers, Robert Lavoie Finnicum, who died in a confrontation with FBI agents and Oregon state troopers that also resulted in the arrest of Bundy and others. Bundy said in the recording, "Go home, Oregon State Police. You have already killed enough. And go home, FBI. It is time to end this." FBI agents, Oregon State Police, and other law enforcement officers are deployed around the refuge as the last few occupiers continue to refuse to leave. The standoff began January 2nd with Bundy's group demanding the federal government turn public lands over to local control and free two ranchers imprisoned for setting fires. Two conspirators traveled to the sparsely populated area of southeastern Oregon last October to warn the local sheriff of extreme civil unrest if certain demands were not met, according to the indictment. Once the occupation began, the group brandished firearms to keep officials from carrying out their duties, threatened violence, and intimidated locals to effectuate the goals of the conspiracy, the documents say. Defense attorneys have said at court hearings that their clients engaged in civil disobedience and are being punished for political speech. They say the only use of force was by police who shot and killed Finnicum during a January 26 traffic stop. Finnicum's death led to protests last week by those supporting the occupation, while local residents rallied to urge the holdouts to leave, further dividing the strained community. Federal authorities fear those tensions could pop up elsewhere and have increased security at national wild refuges in southern Oregon, Northern California and Nevada and put the rest of the preserves nationwide on heightened alert. The additional security measures are in place at Klamath Basin National Wildlife Refuge Complex, which straddles the Oregon-California border, Ash Meadows National Wildlife Refuge in Nevada, and Madoc National Wild Refuge in Northern California. Preserves and other national sites run by the Fish and Wildlife Service are being extra vigilant, said Gavin Shire, the agency's chief of public affairs. Due to the evolving situation in eastern Oregon, all service stations are on alert and being advised to take appropriate caution, Shire said in a statement. And this is from Decatur. A Decatur man had a ring of cocaine around his left nostril when police stopped him Monday afternoon on suspicion he was using and dealing drugs, sworn statements allege. Police had gone to the intersection of East Garfield Avenue and Central Drive to deal with a domestic dispute when they encountered Tracy L. Cunningham, 45, and said they noticed the drug residue staining his nose. Cunningham was searched, and officers reportedly recovered a baggie with 1.1 grams of cocaine. Another baggie held five individual corner baggies, and it's alleged three of these contained 1.5 grams of crack cocaine, and the other two held small amounts of heroin. A police dog then detected drugs in Cunningham's car. Police said that they claimed six corner baggies were seized from the vehicle holding crack cocaine with a combined weight of 3 grams, and a seventh bag held half a gram of heroin. This type of packaging is consistent with street-level narcotic sales, the statements noted. Police said they seized more than $150 in cash, and all the drugs were discovered in Cunningham's possession within 800 feet of Harris School. Cunningham was booked into Macon County Jail on multiple charges of unlawful possession of drugs with intent to deliver and for possessing those drugs within 1,000 feet of a school. He remained jailed Tuesday in lieu of posting a $125,000 bond. He is due in court January 19th. And this is from Mawika. Central A&M juniors Olivia Jordan and Gabby Cole led the Raiders in points, but Thursday was about the Raiders sending off four seniors in style with the Central Illinois Conference regular season championship. Ryan Dooley scored 10 points, and Mika Maples added 7 as the Raiders jumped all over Shelbyville for a 74-23 win. The Raiders led 43-8 at halftime. It was a great night for our four seniors, A&M coach Tom Dooley said. The class also includes Shelby Daly and Abigail Hilton. We're looking forward to postseason and hopefully can make a run. Jordan scored a team-high 12 points, and Cole chipped in 11. Morgan Powers scored 15 for the Rams. And then in Tuscola, Meridian had three players to match Tuscola, but the Warriors had too much more to earn the win. Amy Alkamp, 13 points, Chloe Herbert, 11, and Hannah Wetzel, 9, kept the Hawks in the game through a half, trailing 20-17. But then Tuscola picked it up with the help of Maddle Meinheld, 14 points. Meridian played tough tonight. We knew they would be ready and tough, Tuscola coach Tim Kohlbecker said. Our defense improved in the second half. Anna Kaufman, 10 points, and Alexis Koster, 7, made some big shots for us in the second half. Tuscola scored 36 points in the second half to pick up the win. The Warriors end with a third in the CIC standings. Thank you for tuning in to Radio Reader. This is Naomi Jacobson reading the Decatur Herald and Review. Thank you.